This is the Taranaki Museum Oral History Program, an interview with Mr. Goodwin, who is currently visiting New Plymouth from his home in Hawke's Bay. Today is the 30th of July, 1997. We're recording on a Sony WN-D6C cassette recorder using Sony ECM144 microphones. The interviewer is Mary Donald, and this is tape three. You were talking about your awards. And,
I can't recall too many at the moment. I've had a number of life memberships, but some of them are more or less open memberships. The only ones that I seem to, well, I value most are the ones that are limited distribution. But sometimes I think that might be a little bit hard on some of the other people who are equally deserving. And in the organisations I've been associated with, we have developed supplementary awards that are warranted by these people that are just unfortunate enough not to be able to qualify by means of number, because they've been excluded by somebody who lives too long, or such remark could be passed. Perhaps I've lived too long myself. I don't know.
It's very special, isn't it, to be one of the early recipients such awards. I mean, it's a great honour.
Yes, I quite appreciate. In fact, they've been announced, I've been rather overwhelmed by the honour, and why me, and do I deserve it any better? It wasn't somebody else. And I can remember well was the IDS one, but there were two people that I said, well, I'm a great pleasure in accepting, but I do feel so humble, and particularly in my knowledge of the work of two other members, and I named them, and my nomination was seconded, and they also received the awards the following year. And I can't, probably different things will come to mind, but those are the more important ones, I think, of the life membership of New Zealand Institute of Parks was one that I appreciated, and then I later wrote or assisted in writing the history of New Zealand Institute of Parks and Recreation. But I think I've covered most of them. I mean, you can think of something that might have cropped up, I can't remember. There are quite a large number of honorees.
It would be really nice if we can actually make a list of those, and then, because what we do with these oral histories, we have the tapes, and we also have a folder which we gather information about you, which backs up information about that, and reinforces what is already on the tape. So at some stage, perhaps we can write a list out of bits and pieces and pop them in. That'd be good for the record. So I think it's quite important to note these things. What would you like to talk about next?
Well, I thought that we should finish that piece off, and then
we'll go back to
the first impressions of the Pukekura Park.
Right. I'm dying to hear it.
Well, when I came up for my appointment, I stayed the night with Mr. Saxon, who was then chairman of the Pukekura Park Committee. And In the morning, he took me out into the park. And he said, put on some rough clothes and old clothes. I didn't have any old clothes, of course, but I got prepared myself to for a walk in the park anyway. And he took a slasher with him. And we had to cut our way into the Phillips Street Gully beside the kindergarten now, where the kindergarten is now. The cows, some of the cows were lying down. The convolvulus had gone up over them. Other weedy climbers, and the weight of them had weighed down the cowrie trees. Some of the cowrie trees were out of shape, badly out of shape for that very reason. Others had managed to keep themselves clear. But that was just one corner of the park. And one thing, one that George had appreciated the other day, was that the corner from the Phillips Street Gully around towards the fernery and the lake, and the main lake, was completely shocker with seedling sycamore trees. And some of them have got quite big trunks. Some of them have been let go, I think, during the Depression years because the unemployment employed didn't do any of the heavier work, or very much of it. And the sycamores had actually got to the stage where they were suppressing the native plant growth. And so that was one of the first jobs, and it was very hard to appreciate it, although if you'd seen the town belt in Wellington and the town belt in Dunedin and some of the reserves in Christchurch after the war, you'd have realized that the parks throughout the country suffered because they weren't essential, and most of the younger active men were away overseas. The older men carried on much longer than normal. I think several of them carried on to their 80s. And so New Plymouth wasn't alone in that respect, and it's no disrespect to those that were left to carry on, that they managed to keep towards the main walks open anyway. And the strawberry tree, which makes quite a nice, the Nepal strawberry tree, the Benthamia here. I quite valued it when I came here because of its flowering in early January in the summer when a lot of others are finished. It also has a grey-green foliage, which is a contrast. It also has a masses of fruit in the autumn, which the tuis love it, and a lot of other birds as well. But in places they'd seeded themselves down and they were just coming up so thick that they were choking one another out, that sort of thing. So we had a lot of the strawberry tree to cut out, and again in different areas, and a whole lot worse than others. And but the plant material, anything that was in the way of litter or tree fern fronds and leaves, as we tried to retain that as a mulch on the ground to help build up the soil again as we prepared sites for new more trees and things like that. And the stakes were that we saved from the clearing of all these masses of seedlings, we used them in securing the turf on the terraces had deteriorated, and we had to re-turf the faces of the terrace, and we had to use these long stakes to anchor them into the bank. Now they're using timber to secure the banks with. Originally, they were just turf banks pegged into place, and they held securely for a good many years. Also, we got a good source of charcoal from those sycamore trees. We saved the charcoal for use in potting mixes and and for digital glasshouse work. But,
so did you draw up a plan about what you wanted to do with the park?
Well, the...
Or was there plans already in existence?
The committee were ahead of me there. I can mention that the night I arrived in New Plymouth, I had an address to the Institute of Horticulture with 100 people present. Because I had no impressions of New Plymouth to give them except from occasional visits with students in the Massey days, and I came here in the late Depression years. I had one visit before the Massey College days. So the first thing they wanted me to draw up a report on recommendations of what I considered as good and should be done. And they wanted it for the next meeting, which would be a month away. And I felt that I just couldn't possibly even get round the boundary fences in a month. And so I asked for 3 months. And regrettably, I've not been able to find that copy of that report. But the report did cover, I can tell you that it covered, the only thing that I didn't actually accomplish was managed to establish, it was actually incorporated at Kawerau Park later. That was a public aquarium. And they did have one operating at Kawerau Park for some years, but that was about the only one thing that was in there that wasn't actually completed. But some of them took 20 years to complete. I can remember the waterfall was the first one on the list was the waterfall, the artificial waterfall at the end of the walk leading down from the band tent to the Hughes Walk on the hillside. And that was one of my very firm impressions that it would be very effective indeed. And I had actually made, when I was in North Wales, I'd made a sketch of a waterfall there, a famous scenic attraction, which I thought would feature there. And when we came to build that, George Fuller worked on that, Ian McDowell worked on that, and Mr. Brody, the engineer, helped us with the basic formation. And we were able, I think, we got some grant to audit from insurance company, New Zealand Insurance Company, I think, if I remember rightly. They made us a grant to the, for their centenary, I think it was, to the people of New Plymouth. And that was another of the water effects. The first one was the fountain. And then the water wheel came later, but it was included in that. The bowl.
So these are all in your original plan?
Yes. The sound shell across the water. The first suggestion came to me from Dougal Mackenzie of Palmerston North, that we should put it on the end of Cannon Hill by the bandstand there. But I had the problem that we found that we didn't have, at that time we didn't even have the hatchery lawn, because that was a lily pond, that so much of the flat land was occupied, there wasn't really room for big crowds anywhere. And I felt that we'd probably have to go to Brooklands later on, and there was a natural amphitheatre up there. And the opening of stage sound shell was included, although it was, I don't know when I was in England, that theme at Brooklands was adopted. So that was something that I'd voiced so many years before, and then it came to fruition 7 years, 8 years later.
Gosh, that must have been an amazing amount of work that you had to do to try and figure out what was in the park already and what possible things you could do with it, all in 3 months.
Actually, one of the things is before I signed my conditions of appointment, I was required to keep the boundary fences in good repair and order.
Stop getting in and out.
Yes. Well, the boundary fence on Brooklands Road Plantation was buried in grass. You couldn't find it. And on the racecourse side, they didn't need the fences over there, and they just let them go over the years up in the Maranui and those areas up there. When I tried to find the fences, I couldn't find them. I knew where the boundaries were. So I went to Mr. Bellringer, who was the town clerk at the time, and I told him, I said, if you wish to apply that condition to my appointment, I said, I don't think it's achievable, nor do I think it's desirable to spend all that money to fence all those areas when there's no real need for fencing.